You're listening to Robert Wright's Non-Zero Podcast.
Hi, Andrea.
Hi, Bob. Thank you for having me on the show.
Well, thank you for being on the show. Let me introduce you. I'm Robert Wright, publisher of the Non-Zero Newsletter. And this is the Non-Zero Podcast. And you are Andrea Miotti, the founder and CEO of Control AI, a nonprofit that, as the name suggests, is concerned about the challenge of controlling AI. You're among the people who are concerned about AI risk, including kind of the ultimate risk of AI actually getting smart enough and having the inclination to take over, possibly to the detriment of humankind, and possibly implying the extinction of humankind even. I have had a number of conversations with people about this possibility, but we're not going to debate you and I here today, like how likely it is to happen. I'm personally convinced that it's something we can't rule out and should think about and take precautions against. But the thing I like about what you're doing, again, as the name suggests, Control AI, is that you're actually thinking about what you could do to keep this from happening, which is pretty challenging at a policy level, if you ask me. So you are very specifically concerned with the super intelligence threat. And so I wanted to start out by asking you, you hear two terms, okay? You hear artificial general intelligence, then you hear super intelligence. I don't think there's a complete consensus on exactly what those terms mean and what the relationship is between them and whether they are the same thing. I think some people would say they are and some wouldn't. But what is your understanding of the terminology? How do you use these terms? What does super intelligence mean to you? What does artificial general intelligence mean to you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, first of all, this is a sign that we are, in many ways, in a pre-paradigmatic field where we have these terms that are not fully fixed in stone, and actually should be another sign of caution. Of, you know, we have companies barreling ahead as fast as possible to build AI systems smarter than people, while our scientific understanding of machine intelligence and arguably intelligence in general is still fairly rudimentary. And this is one of these many signs. We are in a pre-paradigmatic field, where especially in a pre-paradigmatic field, when it comes to knowing how to control and direct such intelligence, especially when it is very competent and very powerful. Generally, at Control AI, we focus on super intelligence, and we generally mean by that AI systems that are vastly more competent than individual people and even groups of people. This is in many ways the original term and the goal of many AI companies right now, the stated goal. Companies like Meta has now started a division called Meta Superintelligence that targets building this technology. OpenAI was focused on developing superintelligence from its start. I think sometimes they've used AGI as either an equivalent term or like a slightly earlier stage, but fundamentally, the goal of OpenAI is fairly clearly, you know, these AI systems are much more competent, not than just a single individual at a specific task, but of groups of individuals, you know, in some ways of companies or governments even, at many, many different tasks, at a general range of tasks. This is the goal of Anthropic. I don't believe they use the exact word superintelligence, but they use other euphemisms like powerful AI or a country of geniuses in a data center, which is, again, the same notion. So AI systems that are vastly more competent than any individual human and also more competent than a group of humans. And that's part of the nature of AI. If you train, if you develop a single AI system that is very powerful, you can then quickly, with roughly the same amount of computation, deploy tens of thousands, if not millions, of that AI system in parallel.
Right. And they can collaborate in principle. I mean, so you could have like a super brain of super brains in a certain sense. Exactly. In these scenarios, which I got to say, I can't find a way to completely dismiss. you know, I would add that although some people might say, okay, there's a distinction between artificial general intelligence and superintelligence, I think even with a lot of those people, the distinction isn't that important, because in the kind of standard scenario, even if AGI is a little less than super, once you get to AGI in the standard scenarios, things are moving so fast. The progress is happening so fast that you're just going to skyrocket toward super intelligence and super, super intelligence. And, you know, there are people who right now are saying, look, we're seeing signs of acceleration. And I don't think they're crazy, I got to say. So as for the challenge posed by this, there's a number, you know, maybe the closest precedent to humankind tackling a technology that has perils that are in some ways comparable to the perils you see, you know, is nuclear weapons. And it was pretty clear that was going to require an international effort, you know, international treaties of some kind, including especially the Non-Proliferation Treaty, which has been, you know, not perfectly successful, but it's kept them from blowing up so far. Yeah. But this is, AI is in some ways much more challenging, right? Because for one thing, it's just a less conspicuous thing in a way, right? Like a nuclear program, it's like a big plant somewhere doing this very easy to define thing. Like there's no doubt, like if you have access to the plant, it's not hard to say whether you've crossed the threshold and so on. And it's hard, maybe getting a little easier, but it's hard to like distribute the thing across, you know, there has to be something kind of big, and you know, bombs themselves, they're of non-trivial size. AI is, you know, it's kind of more elusive. You could have a pretty powerful open source model downloaded on your computer. And then there is, again, as with nuclear weapons, the international challenge. And this shows up in the form of the standard, you know, reply of the big, you know, Sam Altman and Dario Amodei and so on, these CEOs of big AI companies, when you say, well, wait, you know, maybe we'd like to regulate you, do this, do that, you know, they're like, no, no, China, you can't, because China, this is life and death competition with China. And they will point out, you know, it isn't just like nuclear weapons. Like you could have been a world power in the 50s without civilian uses of nuclear technology. But they would say with AI, you know, you're just going to be a primitive economy compared to everything else if you're not on the cutting edge. So although some of them would say, you know, for military reasons alone, you can't hold us back because China's this existential peril. They would also say for purposes of economic competition, you know, this stuff just pervades our economy. We've got to have it and so on. So I'm just laying out some reasons that your mission is very complicated, as I'm sure, yeah. You know. I think you have a way of approaching it and talking about it that makes it sound not too daunting, but you acknowledge the challenges, I assume, right?
Yeah. So kind of like to get it out of the way, I think the challenges are very large. I think this might be one of the, if not the biggest problem we face as a species, as the human species in our history. You know, and I don't say this lightly. So I think the challenges are enormous. But I think it can be done. I think a lot of the points that you bring up are points that come up very often. Many of them have, you know, strong merit. I think, although it's kind of, I would categorize them in two buckets, maybe. I mean, there is a bucket of how do you, in practice, do this. The one that you were saying, like bombs are conspicuous, and I think that's, you know, that's a very important side of the question. You know, how do we actually put in place the measures that keep humanity in control, that avoid the development of superintelligence durably? And then there's more of the kind of social and political questions, like how do we do the international coordination? What are the moves that we need to do? How to deal with that? I would say on the first one, and all analogies break, you know, if you pull them far enough, right? But I think on the first one, AI is at the moment at least still very conspicuous. We are not in the worst possible world. Like right now, in practice, any superintelligence program looks like a enormous, multiple enormous data centers that occupy a very big swathe of land, consume a lot of electricity that you can monitor in a variety of ways, especially if you are a very motivated state-level intelligence service.
Okay. So let me, can I interrupt and just ask, so the data centers being built now, like the biggest ones, I guess maybe Elon Musk's Colossus or whatever, and that's probably as big as any, right?
Yeah.
Are you saying that that's the thing you have to look for? Are you saying the thing you have to look for is even bigger than that? Because you would have to have a bigger training run than we're doing now to get to true superintelligence.
Yeah, I agree. What I'm saying is kind of like in the same way that for nuclear, you can look for turbines and they're very physical. You know, we're not just looking at abstract physical, you know, process in the realm of physics. We actually can see like the turbines being built. Like if you are a state, for example, if the USA wanted to prevent superintelligence, you know where to look, right? You know where to look. These data centers are very big. Maybe they're not doing superintelligence, but, you know, there is a clear company you can ask. You can identify them from satellite. It's fairly hard to do an actual black site here, especially from a private company. Might be a bit easier from a state actor, but kind of we're not in a world yet, and I say yet, and this is why I think there is urgency in what we do, where superintelligence can be done in secret, outside of the purview of a major government, with very few resources. This is not the case. I don't think it's going to be the case for years.
And one more clarifying question. So you're not saying that just by gauging the sheer computational power, you could know whether they're developing superintelligence, but by gauging that power, you could know whether you need to look into it further to know, right? So in other words, like right now, you'd say, look, there's only I don't know what you'd say. There's only like 8, 10, 12, 20 things on the whole planet that are big and powerful enough, you know, computation-wise, to be doing this. So it's easy to locate the places that you need to kind of interrogate,
Exactly. It's exactly that. In the same way that, like, you know, with nuclear weapons, you know, we would first start, like, hey, you know, where are turbines being built? Where is this material being enriched? Where are people stockpiling the fissile material they need? And the number is not infinite. It's not in every backyard or in every house, right? Like, again, a government like the USA or a coalition of countries like, you know, USA and other allied countries can, I think, figure this out pretty quickly and, like, narrow down where they should look into further.
Okay. So, and then what do you need to find out after that? I mean, what is the interrogation like? I mean, let's say that you had the authority, let's say that the government or some third party had been given the authority to look into the situation and find out whether superintelligence is being developed at a given, you know, data center or whatever. What would you look for? Would you have to question scientists? Would you have to see some of the algorithms that are guiding the training run or what?
So I would say right now, I think there is a gap between where we are right now and where, like, we could be in a much harder world. I think right now it's extremely easy. We have companies publicly saying that they want to build superintelligence, right?
It's a bit that's one of the signs, yes.
Exactly. I think, you know, right now we are, I would say, in easy mode, right? Like, we have companies saying this. They are explicitly hiring for automated AI R&D engineers. You know, they have job postings publicly. There are teams inside that are dedicating some of their brightest minds to make recursive self-improvement happen. We have co-founders of some of these companies. For example, I believe Anthropic in The Guardian, in a long piece some time ago earlier this year, one of the co-founders clearly said, we expect to, you know, initiate something like an intelligence explosion maybe by 2027 or earlier. And he's very, very clear about the intention. So right now, I think intent is clear. Right now, I think there are, you can look for things that I would call precursors. But again, we're in so easy mode that we don't even need to look at precursors right now. Like, they talk about it publicly. But some precursors would be, even if they don't talk about publicly or internally in their in their structure and in their plans about building superintelligence, they would talk about doing fully automated AI R&D. You know, this doesn't mean, of course, just using a code assistant. You know, I use a code assistant. It's not the same. But if you have a whole program to do AI that can fully automate its own development, it's a strong sign that you're either about to accidentally initiate an intelligence explosion, or you are intentionally initiating an intelligence explosion. And for the purposes of preventing superintelligence, right now, when we don't know how to control it, those are very strong signs that we should look into this further, perhaps restrict this and say, you know, no thanks, do something else. I think there are other precursor capabilities that are very relevant. For example, AI systems that are extremely good at hacking and especially can hack out of their environment or containment. We have some early signs of that, but stronger versions of that would be very concerning, because even the, you know, even the most well-defended company, if they put measures, you know, if they refuse to build superintelligence, they're not planning to do so, they are instructing their employees not to do so, they have, you know, clear programs, and they put technical barriers in place, but the AI is smart enough and competent enough at hacking, they can just subvert all of this containment, then we are in trouble, right? You know, we have an AI that can just escape its environment and perhaps initiate some of this itself. So I would look at those precursors. But fundamentally, I would say that the high level is we need a normative stance, which is a prohibition of superintelligence. Make it very, very clear. You can do many things. You can do many types of AI development, but explicitly building superintelligence is outlawed. And then we should look at a combination of factors. Some of it is computing power, but also some of it is these factors like attempted intelligence explosion, trying to automate AI R&D, AI is becoming more and more capable. And looking at all of those together, I think right now would give us a very clear picture of where we should say, no, you need to stop, and where we should say, please go ahead, no worries.
And do you feel confident that the AI we have today and maybe the AI that's on the horizon, you know, a few months from now, I mean, basically the things we're going to see in a few months are already in the labs being refined, you know, do you feel confident that all of that is below the superintelligence threshold? In other words, just kind of can't get out of control. I mean, the reason I ask is, again, because of this idea of acceleration, you know, some people say, look, it's a slippery slope. I mean, you know, once you get close to it, it'll be too late because things will be moving so fast. Do you feel confident that right now there's no intelligence now or on the immediate horizon that couldn't get out of control in a way that we can't reverse?
So I'm not confident, but I think the answer here is, you know, I'm not confident either way. And I don't have this information. And I think the biggest warning sign is that governments don't have this information. I would say even worse. I think companies are kind of gambling in the dark, right? And so I think that the biggest priority is to move out of this just very dangerous position where we are just barreling towards this, to one where we have government stepping in saying, you cannot do this type of program if we... you know, if you talk about this program, we're going to actually check that if you're doing it and they're going to tell you to stop. If you suspect that you're doing this program, we're going to check. So then we can start actually having this information into trusted third parties like governments and figure out the next steps. I think the problem right now is that just there is no government oversight at all. Companies can gamble as much as they want, and we need to get out of that paradigm as soon as possible. If it's already too late, well, this is a unfortunate timeline, but we need to focus on improving the situation as fast as possible, and I think it can be improved very fast.
Yeah, it's funny how little transparency the government has asked for, because you do read that, you know, according to public opinion polls, there's quite a bit of public skepticism about this technology, but the federal government at least has asked for like nothing. And just to give you an example, they haven't even asked these companies to tell us what training data they used. Now, when you think about that, it's not like, you know, super secret, you know, it's not information that it would really hurt them in principle to release or put them at some huge competitive disadvantage. And there's clearly a public interest in knowing for a couple of reasons. First of all, there are copyright issues, right? You, it would be nice to know, are you violating copyright law? And by the way, when you suggest that maybe they should deal with that, Sam Altman has said, no, you can't hold us accountable to copyright law because that would slow us down. And you've heard about China and blah, blah, blah. But the other thing is, you know, we deserve to know if the training data is biasing the stuff, like, for example, ideologically. Are there left-wing as well as right-wing foreign policy journals that are part of the training data? You know, we deserve to know that. And it's such a tiny ask when you think about it. We're not asking for any trade secrets. We're not asking to look at any algorithms. Just like, what did, you know, even let's start long ago. What did GPT-3 train on? The government has not asked for the slightest bit of actual transparency, right? I mean, now I'm talking about my government. You are based in England, and I think your actual efforts are more focused on the British government maybe than the American. But even there, I assume they're not really, of course, they don't have the huge companies there that most need the monitoring. But what I've said is true, right? Like, we're not asking them to do anything so far.
Yeah. I think that's kind of the situation, but I think the bigger thing is that most people, and kind of it goes to like, how do we solve this? Right? You know, there's a lot of things that are going wrong right now, but like, how do we go on the right track? And I think fundamentally, most people in government and most policymakers just don't know about these risks. This has been our experience over and over again, and it's fundamentally our thesis and what we're trying to solve. So you know, when we started out, like at the end of 2024, just over a little over a year ago, our expectation was nothing is happening because simply most lawmakers have never heard once anybody explain to them what's happening with AI, where mm-hmm. are things going, how does it work, and what are the risks about this. You know, we were kind of like, a lot of people in the AI sector know, but even then maybe we overestimate how many know about this, but definitely the vast majority of policymakers have never heard about this. They don't know about this. The vast majority of members of the public don't know about this. And some of it is a failure of people working on AI of not communicating this early enough and loudly enough and widely enough. You know, nobody did this education campaign until now. And I think some of it in the last year has become also AI companies lobbying to slow down this information mm-hmm. exchange. But fundamentally, mm-hmm. I think this can be changed very quickly. And once that changes, a lot of the other things that are not happening will start happening, or at least we'll be in a position where governments are informed and can do this. Now, when we started out, there were zero coalitions of lawmakers in the world that recognize that AI poses an extinction risk and that superintelligence is a national security threat. There were one or two, maybe X lawmakers saying this individually, and that's it. 1 year later, now, you know, we have briefed over 150 lawmakers just here in the UK. We also started actually in the US. We're both based in the UK and the US. We started in Canada. We started in Germany recently. But in the UK, where we've been doing this the longest for 1 year, now we have more than 100 of them publicly supporting a campaign, you know, across parties, left-wing, right-wing, centrist, all together recognizing that top experts warn that AI poses an extinction risk and superintelligence is a national security threat. And now things are moving. Just in January, we had two debates in the UK Parliament, in the House of Lords, about specifically superintelligence, with multiple lords on both sides bringing up things like, should we have an international moratorium? How would we enforce it? You know, should the government start negotiating with other countries? You know, these are all great questions, and it will take time to solve them via in parliaments and in governments, but we need to start asking them now. And, you know, if the same happens in the US, you know, now we're starting, but the more people do this, the better. Informing lawmakers, I expect the majority of Congress just never received a briefing on this topic. So it's not their fault. Like, it's we know about the risk, we need to inform them. You know, if you know about the risk, it's a massive way that you can make a difference is to inform your member of Congress, your senator, about this issue. You know, even if you're in the audience, you can just give them a call, say, I really care about this. Have you heard about this issue? Top experts warn this could cause human extinction. What are you doing about this? And I think if enough people do this, we can change the trajectory very quickly, and we can help governments to sensibly deal with this issue.
Mm-hmm. And I assume that, by the way, if people Google control AI, there's guidance to how people can participate and things they can do. They go to your website?
Yeah. I recommend going to campaign.controlai.com. That's where we have tools that make it really easy to contact your lawmaker in the US, in the UK, and elsewhere, and tools to call them. You can mail them, physical mail. You can write to them, and there are information of how to approach them. And again, it might sometimes feel daunting, but it's as easy as spending 2 to 3 minutes, maximum 5, and let them know that you care about this.
Okay. So I gather your approach could be called kind of bottom up in the following sense. I mean, ultimately, if you're going to have an effective international regulatory system, which everyone agrees you would need if you're going to take a serious shot at regulation of AI. In fact, everyone, you know, even Sam Altman and Dario, as much as they might resist actual regulation, they have said that ultimately you're going to need some international authority. Sundar Pichai said the same thing, Demis Hassabis. And what a lot of people would say about that is, well, wait, US and China consider each other adversaries. You're going to have to solve that problem. So why not start there, like convince these two countries to get together and talk? It sounds like what you're doing is more like getting action going at the national level in as many countries as possible. And that can include just saying, oh, maybe, and maybe it's all more as a thought experiment in a way, but like, well, how would we regulate this stuff at the national level? Like with a country like Britain or Canada, you know, when I say thought experiment, what I mean is they don't have the big AI companies there. And so that's good in a way, because there's not as formidable a lobby that's discouraging that kind of conversation there. At the same time, the answers they come up with are in a way less consequential than they would be in the United States, right? Where if you had the political momentum, you could actually do something more meaningful with it. But am I right in thinking that, like, you know, although you can imagine action at all levels, and I think people should be thinking about U.S.-China relations in this very context, but what you're kind of focusing on is getting as many nations as possible to just start thinking about this, even if they're thinking at the level of national policy and it's ultimately going to take more than that, just like get them thinking, kind of, right?
Yeah, and I think getting them thinking is also the precondition for any international action. So kind of the reason why international action is not happening right now is, again, I believe fundamentally because the leadership of most countries, including the US leadership, but also the leadership of countries like the UK or France, Canada, of Germany, and so forth, just doesn't know about the problem. And nobody is telling them. It's a bit, you know, it's a bit better than 1 year ago. Like now we have sometimes, you know, we have these topics pop up on TV, but like how salient are they compared to all of the other political issues going on? Not much. And just, again, kind of frankly, in our experience, when we start meeting lawmakers, you know, one by one, systematically, most of them have never had anybody going to them and explain them the problem. And like, I just see this as a fundamental precondition for anything else further. How can we expect countries to start working together on this, discussing potential international deals, whether they are kind of a heavier set like the one with international organizations, or whether they are more lean? I think a lot of this can be done just with bilateral and multilateral agreements. I think, you know, the US could bring together a coalition of countries that agree in a much faster way than a formal agreement that this is it's a top national security priority to avoid having superintelligence being built at home and abroad, and treats it the same way as they treat any other major national security threat. I think that quickly would shift the equilibrium and could, you know, either get China on the fold or pressure China to avoid developing this. But fundamentally, what's missing is not any magic ingredient at the top. I think what's missing is that lawmakers don't know. If they don't know, they don't act. If they don't know that this is a risk that they personally face, their country is facing, their population is facing, they're not going to do anything about this. And we need to solve this first bottleneck of giving people the information to as many of them as possible, and then help them take the next actions.
Mm-hmm. But it does seem to me that ultimately you're going to need a true transformation of American foreign policy and attitudes toward other countries, especially China. And one reason I say that is not just because it needs to be kind of an international effort, but because it seems to me it's going to become a more and more challenging effort over time in the following sense. Like, you're right. Right now, it's not hard to locate the people you'd need to talk to. You know, it's like Elon Musk, Sam Altman, right? It's like there's a finite number of these huge things, a few big Chinese companies. But as time goes on, it does seem to me not implausible to imagine that it's going to be, you know, it's like biotechnology in a way, like the threat of biotech. You know, there was a time when you would have needed a huge research center to come up with some new virus that was threatening. And that and more that can be done in, like, you know, small, inconspicuous spaces with readily available tools, which, by the way, is another reason we need international governance. And of course, AI is related to that in the sense that AIs can make it easier to build bioweapons and so on. But the point is that I would imagine AI requiring a finer and finer kind of grained transparency over time, right? So, I mean, do you think that premise is wrong? Because if it's true, it means that eventually we're going to need a completely transformed geopolitics where we're just, there's just a higher level of kind of interchange and communication and even trust between superpowers. Does that sound crazy?
I don't think it sounds crazy, but I think it's also not as tough or as quick. And like the input is the same. Like, regardless of how, okay, let me put it this way. I think it right now we are at a particularly good moment to intervene. I agree that if we do nothing, I think it's gonna get more and more like this. Like, mm-hmm. if we do nothing, the problem is only gonna get harder. But there is no way out. Similarly to biology. Like, the best way is to intervene as early as possible and start building now the norms and the institutions that we will need to survive this. Kind of as a species, we will develop more and more powerful technologies. The more powerful technologies we develop, the more the fallout of some of these technologies will be massive, potentially catastrophic for our entire species. If we get this wrong once, you know, if we kill ourselves once, we're out. We don't get to play the game of life ever again. So we will face this challenge, hopefully multiple times. You know, I think the first filter is going to be AI. It's coming out pretty fast. We will have to face this again. We have faced some of these in the past and we succeeded. Like you said, with nuclear weapons, there was a world where there is no effort to do non-proliferation, where technology of, you know, miniaturizing nuclear weapons goes very far and everybody has access to them. And I don't know, everybody can build a fusion bomb in their backyard. And that the world where everybody can build a fusion bomb in their backyard is a world where we're likely dead. You know, we're not having this conversation right now. And we avoided that world. We have a lot of still existing problems with nuclear weapon proliferation, but we are not in that scenario. And the US, kind of regardless of the US's position on international institutions, you know, the US is clearly very active in making sure that nuclear proliferation doesn't happen when it threatens its security. You know, it's ultimately in the interest of the
well,
US.
Well, yeah, but our approach is increasingly to blow up countries we don't like. I mean, this is an area where there's been tremendous, whatever the opposite of progress is, you know, regress. I mean, you know, I think we have to be realistic. I appreciate your optimism, but I'm not sure you appreciate the odds we face. And, you know, you're not American, and I understand in Europe, there's more of a history of interacting, you know, communicating with neighbors, interacting constructively because there's so many countries packed together. And after World War II, I think they kind of realized they were going to have to get along. I just, the American, you know, Trump is, it's true that he's a particularly crude and primitive person, but and tribal, but in a way, he's just a caricature of U.S. foreign policy. I mean, I you know, I don't want to deliver a big editorial here, but to cite nuclear weapons as an area that should inspire optimism to me. I mean, look, Iran is a perfect example. We had a deal with Iran that was working and ensuring us that nuclear weapons, that they weren't building nuclear weapons. And then 3 weeks ago, they were making an offer to Trump that would have restored that and again given us confidence. But he decided he'd rather blow up the country. I mean, that's where we actually are in human history. Okay? So I think I encourage you to keep doing what you're doing, but I'm telling you, you face some steep odds. Because I'm living in the most powerful country in the world, and there is like zero enlightenment here. Okay? None.
I completely agree that the odds are maybe stacked against us. But yeah. I think kind of like the things that we need to do if we want things to go well are the same. And so I think the best way to focus on them. And I think kind of even, you know, even in light of the current conflict in Iran, I think it's, you know, this does still tell us that the U.S., in whatever way, you know, they go about it, but the U.S. does take non-proliferation very seriously and will intervene in a variety of ways and very much signals to other countries, don't go that route.
That we will bomb their data centers, but they feel the same, but China's going to feel the same way about us. That's not a stable equilibrium where we're bombing each other's data centers.
Oh, yeah, I think we should do every single thing before ever getting to the point. I completely agree. Like, I think the natural way to do this is, again, one, I think step one is information. It's like right now, we can't even expect a deal or like even a kind of like low trust mutual monitoring set up or like mutual deterrent set up because countries don't even realize that super intelligence is the national security threat that it is. I think step two, if most countries around the world actually understand how dangerous and how like existential for the existence of their country, the development of super intelligence is, and they see another country or a non-state actor still going about this, I think the first step should always be diplomacy, you know, going through the normal and natural escalation ladder. First step should be diplomacy. Second step should be economic pressure. But if we get beyond economic pressure, I think it is a stable situation, one where countries that understand how big of a threat superintelligence is would threaten and dissuade others from going ahead. Otherwise, they will deploy the entirety of the escalation ladder. I think this actually disincentivizes the development. So I think we are in a hard world, but we are in a world where this is still possible with AI, and we can work very, very hard together.
And I appreciate that in the case of nuclear technology, like so far, a version of that has kept things from getting completely out of hand, which is that powerful countries pretty forcefully discourage other countries from getting nuclear weapons. At the same time, the number of countries with nuclear weapons has grown, and they have just said, well, we're not part of the non-proliferation treaty, and we're developing them, Israel, India, Pakistan. And as for AI, the problem with like the U.S. being the hegemon that enforces this stuff is that, you know, if China accepts the premise of superintelligence, that it's going to give the whatever nation develops at first huge power, and we maintain the lead that Dario Amede is so intent on us maintaining because he thinks that will somehow lead to a better world. The truth is what it'll lead to is a situation where it isn't profoundly in China's interest to bomb our data centers, okay? If they think they're behind, that will be the incentive. And they can do it because they have a strong enough military. So, again, this is going to, I think, require an absolute transformation of American foreign policy, which at the moment is run by people, and I don't just mean the government, I mean the think tanks and so on, at the moment is run by people who just don't get the picture.
I think, but your last point about Amode, I think, is a very crucial one. I think I completely agree and like on the fact that if the point that is coming across is developing superintelligence puts you into a decisive strategic advantage to control the planet, this is setting up a terrible situation. You know, and it's obviously setting up the incentives that you say. But I think, A, that's not true. And I think, you know, Amodei and others are doing a massive disservice to their country and the world by doing this. Mm-hmm. And B, that's where the key is, that we need to communicate the truth about superintelligence, that right now, if we develop it, no matter whether it's developed at home or abroad, we cannot control it. So we are developing an adversary that we cannot control, that is more capable than us, that threatens the extinction of humanity, which also means threatens the national and global security of all countries. And I think if we make countries understand that, it moves to a situation where it's like winner takes all, which I think is just false. You know, I think the only winner would be an AI in that situation, to a situation where countries understand, I don't want to build this, and I will stop everybody else from building this. And I think that is a stable equilibrium. That is an equilibrium where if you have enough countries that get that, that get it's a universal threat, it's not a prisoner's dilemma. You know, there is no payoff in the medium term from defecting. You know, you defect and you just give up control to the superintelligence. You don't get to control yourself. If we make that clear, I think this is what can shift the equilibrium. And I think that's why this information is so crucial. What we've seen is that in practice, I think kind of an empirical nugget of hope is that in our experience, when we communicate this to policymakers in, you know, one-to-one, and they have time to ask questions and they have time to look into this, across political parties, they get it. You know, they go like, it makes sense. We need to do something about this. We need to do something about this now. We don't need to, we shouldn't get to that position. This is not, you know, just a prisoner's dilemma. It might be with other AI, you know, there are other questions about AI use and AI development, but I think with superintelligence, it is not a prisoner's dilemma. There is no payoff in the medium term from defecting. Any power gain is very fleeting, and no country can stay in control of superintelligence durably. And if countries understand this, then the game shifts.
Yeah, although I think a lot of people would say, actually, you can stay in control of it durably because it will, you know, again, this is the scenario where the acceleration is so radical that as soon as you get to a certain threshold, whoever's ahead by even 3 months suddenly has absolute dominance. Now, I think there's a lot of problems with this scenario, including the fact that the social impacts of that could blow your country apart, right? Like, you know, mass unemployment, parents freaking out about the new parenting challenges, whole new weird cults forming because the AI is so persuasive and is deployed to that end. That's one of the many things I don't think Dario Amodei seems to be very good at processing. But for that matter, these other people, but in a way, him in particular. Where was I? Anyway, they would say, and Dario Amodei says this, like, if you get there first, you run the world. And if America and its democratic allies get there first, they can bring China to its knees. And then Dario seems to want them to, like, renounce their ideology or something. It gets really fuzzy after that. I don't know what he wants. And if there were any, like, you know, journalists actually who have access to him ever challenging anything he says in a geopolitical way, maybe we'd have the answer, right? Like, what are you talking about? What do you want China to do? Okay. Could you spell it out a little more clearly? Because you're a very powerful person now. But we don't know. But in any event, the point is, Dario thinks you get there first, you win the tournament, you demand that everyone adopt your ideology, we all live happily ever after. It's crazy. It shows zero contact with actual human and geopolitical reality. But that is like a governing paradigm now. And all these people who interview Dario Amodei seem fine with it because they never challenge him on this. And naturally, you know, his public relations people will not expose him to any of the people who had actually asked the good questions.
Yes.
Okay. Dario ain't going to be coming to this podcast. Trust me.
Yeah, I think on this one, you're completely right. But I think that's a crucial one. You're like, yes, if that's a paradigm, that is a terrible paradigm. You know, that's a paradigm where you are signaling to everybody else out loud, which is, I don't know, the biggest blunder in the history of, in military history of humanity. Hey, you know, if you let me go ahead, I will destroy everybody else and take control over the world. You know, that's obviously an untenable situation. It's a situation where everybody else is incentivized to stop you from crossing that line well ahead of time, because you're literally threatening them with their cessation of existence. But that's why I think that, you know, both the analysis and the strategy here are incorrect. The analysis is there is no advantage from being first. If you get first to a superintelligence you don't control, the superintelligence wins. It's not the USA. It's not China. It's not the UK. You know, this is against US interest to have anybody build a technology that could essentially overpower the government. You know, if you can overpower other governments, you can overpower the domestic government too. That is a very, very bad deal. That is not a deal that they should want. And I think that's why it makes sense to say, no, the red line is you don't get to build superintelligence right now. Nobody gets to build superintelligence. This is against the interest of any government, of any country. Now, we are the USA. We don't want anybody at home or abroad building superintelligence. If they do this, they're threatening our continued existence. We don't take that. This is at least also in the rational interest of the Chinese. It's in the rational interest of the UK and other nuclear powers. You know, you don't want somebody, especially you don't want somebody in a random private company that you don't control to build a technology that could essentially overthrow your government, overpower your military, and so on. That's, you just don't want to get into that position. And I think if we clearly signal that, if we clearly put red lines on that, then there is a positive sum game to be played. We move away from this kind of escalatory trap where mm-hmm. just nobody wins except the AI.
Yeah. I mean, I think if a message a lot of people in American foreign policy would understand if you could get their attention is a race toward superintelligence. Leave aside whether the superintelligence will take over and you know, imprison us or kill us. A race toward superintelligence is inherently a profoundly destabilizing thing at the global level that could lead to all kinds of death and destruction in and of itself. And that's the message that among many that I would hope to get out. So, listen, as you know, this podcast has two parts. There's this pretty long public part that's available to everyone. Then we go into overtime. That is available to paid subscribers of the Non-Zero newsletter, which I encourage everyone to become. And also check out the newsletter. There's a lot of stuff there, including on AI. And Andre, you've been kind enough to say you'll stick around, continue to talk in overtime. And again, the link is in the show notes to become a paid subscriber and listen to this part or watch this part. And that also allows you to set up a special podcast feed that forevermore will have just easy access to the full conversations. Before we cross that threshold, I want to give you a chance to I want to remind people they can go to Control AI and find ways to participate. And if you want to give the specific URL again, feel free. And then also do any just quick summing up about what you want people to take home from this.
Yeah. So I believe, and Control AI believes, that we face an enormous challenge, but it can be solved. The biggest bottleneck is that right now, lawmakers around the world, in the US, in the UK, in other countries, simply do not know about the risk. The biggest thing we need to solve in the short term is inform lawmakers at scale about the risk, inform the public about the risk, and this will enable all the next steps that we need to take to address superintelligence. If you care about this, and if you want to do something, the quickest and most impactful thing you can do with just 5 minutes of your time is to contact your lawmaker in the US, UK, or anywhere else you are. Please go to campaign.controlai.com, where you find tools to contact your lawmakers very easily. And if you are looking to work on this issue more full-time, we have currently roles open in the UK. We will soon have new roles open in the US as well.
Okay. So in overtime, we're going to, I want to talk some more about the specific companies and their approaches to safety and whether, which, if any of them amount to much in your view. And also drill down a little further on the question of how you do the assessment of, you know, what it takes to confirm that superintelligence isn't being built and so on. So, again, I encourage people to follow us into overtime. But whether or not you do, thanks for listening or watching this far. And now we are going into overtime.